SBS is Australia's most trusted multilingual broadcaster. Our listeners are loyal, highly engaged, and have supported countless local businesses. We offer advertising packages for businesses of all sizes. Our experienced sales team will guide you through the process of owning a great campaign. Bring your own ad or have our production team make you something in one of our 68 languages. Start the conversation with your new audience today. Email sales@sbs.com.au.
Dit is SBS Dutch. Op sbs.com.au/Dutch staan nog meer interessante verhalen.
SBS, a world of difference. You're with SBS Dutch on mobile, online and on radio.
Dit is SBS Dutch op mobiel, online en op radio.
Graag erkennen wij de traditionele eigenaren van het land van waar we vandaag uitzenden. SBS Dutch betuigt haar respect aan de Cammeraygal mensen en hun ouderlingen uit het heden en het verleden. Ook erkennen we de traditionele eigenaren van alle Aboriginal en Torres Strait Islander landen van waar u vandaag naar ons programma luistert. Goedemorgen en welkom bij SBS Dutch, het Nederlandstalige radioprogramma van SBS. Mijn naam is Paulien Roesink en het is woensdag 10 april 2024. In deze uitzending bellen we met Paul Rubens, de directeur van het grootste Nederlandse festival op het zuidelijk halfrond, het Holland Festival. Op Koningsdag vindt het festival weer plaats, dit keer groter en beter, zo zegt hij. We praten met professor Kate Volliger, sociaal en cultureel historica verbonden aan de Australian Catholic University. Zij gaat een boek schrijven over de Nederlandse Margarita Wolters, die leefde in de 18e eeuw en als spionne een belangrijke informatiebron was voor de Britten, met grote gevolgen voor Australië. En ook hebben we aandacht voor het unieke Australische klimaat en de watervoorraden hier in het land. Dat, achtergronden bij het nieuws en muziek allemaal straks. Nu eerst de SBS Nieuwsflits. Dit is de SBS Nieuwsflits van woensdag 10 april. Mijn naam is Paulien Roesink. De federale oppositie heeft zijn twijfels bij de oproep van Penny Wong voor de erkenning van een Palestijnse staat als onderdeel van een twee-staten-oplossing. Senator Wong zegt dat erkenning een belangrijke stap is en noemt een twee-staten-oplossing de enige hoop op vrede en veiligheid op lange termijn voor Israël. Maar coalitiesenator Simon Birmingham heeft tegen de ABC gezegd dat Wong haar standpunt moet verduidelijken. Burgemeester van Alice Springs, Matt Patterson, wil dat de extra politieeenheden die momenteel in de stad worden ingezet ook na het einde van de avondklok voor jongeren blijven, zo zei hij tegen de ABC. De avondklok is verlengd tot aanstaande dinsdag. Een expert op het gebied van milieu- en klimaatveranderingswetgeving zegt dat de uitspraak van het Europese Hof voor de Rechten van de Mens, waarin werd vastgesteld dat de Zwitserse regering de rechten van haar burgers heeft geschonden vanwege het nalaten van klimaatverandering, een deur opent voor toekomstige rechtszaken. Het Australische Nationale Wetenschapsagentschap zegt dat bijna 9 op de 10 Australiërs een snellere of gematigde transitie naar schone energie willen. De Commonwealth Scientific and Industrial Research Organization heeft een enquête gepubliceerd over de landelijke houding ten opzichte van de transitie naar hernieuwbare energie. Tussen augustus en september 2023 werden ruim 6700 mensen ondervraagd in alle staten en territoria en in hoofdsteden en regionale gebieden. De ouders van een tiener die in 2021 4 leerlingen doodschoot op een school in de Verenigde Staten zijn elk veroordeeld tot tenminste 10 jaar gevangenisstraf, omdat ze geen stappen hebben ondernomen die de moorden hadden kunnen voorkomen. Ethan Crumbly gebruikte een semi-automatisch pistool op de Oxford High School in Michigan en zit nu levenslang zonder voorwaardelijke vrijlating uit. Bij een explosie in een tientallen jaren oude waterkrachtcentrale in Noord-Italië zijn tenminste 3 werknemers om het leven gekomen. 5 anderen raakten gewond. Zeker 4 mensen worden nog vermist. door de explosie in de fabriek ten zuiden van Bologna, die plaatsvond tijdens onderhoudswerkzaamheden, stortte een deel van de 9 verdiepende tellende ondergrondse structuur in, waardoor er brand uitbrak en er overstromingen plaatsvonden op een diepte tot 60 meter. Nieuws uit Nederland dan. Het aantal fietsers dat omkomt in het Nederlandse verkeer neemt verder toe. Vorig jaar was 39% van alle dodelijke verkeersslachtoffers fietser. Aan het begin van deze eeuw was dat nog maar 20%. In 2023 kwamen in totaal 270 fietsers om in het verkeer. Het merendeel door een botsing met een auto. Sinds 2020 sterven er meer fietsers in het verkeer dan automobilisten. Van alle fietsslachtoffers van 2023 reed 43% op een elektrische fiets. In 2019 was dat nog 32%. Tot zover deze nieuwsflits. Volg de SBS Dutch podcast voor meer nieuws en achtergronden. Of bezoek onze website www.sbs.com.au/dutch. We gaan verder met de achtergronden bij het nieuws. Een verplichte gedragscode voor grote supermarkten om prijsopdrijving te voorkomen en boeren te beschermen is een van de belangrijkste aanbevelingen na een review van de sector. Maar voormalig Labour-minister Craig Emerson, die de evaluatie leidde, kwam niet met suggesties voor bevoegdheden die gebruikt zouden kunnen worden om supermarktgiganten Woolworths en Coles uit elkaar te drijven.
Dit is SBS Dutch.
Australische appels zijn dan wel in het seizoen en er is ook veel vraag naar. Maar telers, zoals Ian Pearce, zeggen dat hun winsten dalen.
The returns have been pretty minuscule in recent years. Like for gala apples, I know in our case, yeah, we haven't seen an increase in price for probably 12 or 13 years. So in that time, our labour costs have gone up about 52%. So tough at our end, at the consumer end, the prices seem to have gone up quite a bit at the retail level.
Shoppers zeggen de pijn ook te voelen. Veel consumenten zeggen dat er meer verantwoordelijkheid moet worden genomen voor de aanzienlijke prijsstijgingen en dat ten tijde van een cost of living crisis.
I feel like it is pretty ridiculous at this point.
They're ripping us all off, especially the farmers and the small independent people.
Yes, I think they should be fined and maybe even in prison for price gouging in other industries. You know, people are held accountable. Times are tough and we deserve a break.
Coles en Woolworths boekten vorig jaar allebei miljarden dollars winst, wat aanleiding gaf tot beschuldigingen van prijsopdrijving. Naar aanleiding van een onderzoek naar de relatie tussen supermarkten en leveranciers wordt nu aanbevolen om een nu nog vrijwillige gedragscode verplicht te stellen voor de gehele sector. Minister van Financiën Jim Chalmers heeft het rapport verwelkomd met het argument dat de aanbevelingen de verantwoordelijkheden zullen vergroten.
This is all about a fair go for farmers and families. It recognises that by replacing a voluntary code with a mandatory code, it's easier to enforce. We can impose penalties on people who do the wrong thing. And it's also harder for people to walk away from.
Door de voorgestelde wijzigingen kunnen overtredingen van de gedragscode worden bestraft met boetes tot $10 miljoen of 10% van de jaaromzet van een bedrijf. Voor Coles en Woolworths zou dat neerkomen op ruim $4 miljard. Voormalig Labour-minister Dr. Greg Emerson, die de supermarkt review leidde, zegt dat de strenge straffen helpen om ethisch gedrag te ontmoedigen.
Surely, if you've got the ACCC breathing down your neck and threatening to go to court, you probably change your behaviour so that you didn't have to have such a high-profile court case with such high penalties at risk. If such a fine was applied by the courts, it would have to be pretty much the biggest in corporate history in Australia. And it's really for systemic, really nasty, egregious behaviour.
Volgens de voorzitter van de National Farmers Federation, David Jochinki, zou dit ongehoorde gedrag onder meer bestaan uit intimidatie en het op zwarte lijsten plaatsen van boeren die zich uitspreken over oneerlijke prijzen.
What we're hearing from our members is that they're frightened to speak up. Hence why we are supportive of protections for people who are calling out bad behaviour when they are in fact just wanting to run decent businesses under decent terms and conditions. And that's what a mandatory code will do.
Samen beheersen de twee giganten 2/3 van de markt.
Coles zegt er trots op te zijn om de code te ondersteunen. Woolworths zegt ook achter de code te staan, maar wil dat de regels ook worden toegepast op andere grote retailers zoals Amazon en Costco. Het onafhankelijke onderzoek zegt niets over de introductie van mogelijke bevoegdheden die gebruikt zouden kunnen worden om het supermarktduopolie Woolworths en Coles uiteen te drijven. Zowel de Groenen als de Nationals zijn voorstander van deze stap, waardoor de supermarktgiganten gedwongen zouden kunnen worden Activa te verkopen om hun marktaandeel te verkleinen en concurrentie te bevorderen. Dr. Emerson zegt niet te geloven in deze aanpak, omdat de binnenlandse concurrentie niet in staat is deze Activa op te kopen.
Who are they going to sell the 20% of their stores to? You can say, well, maybe a foreign supermarket. But they're not going to all just flood in to buy, say, 20% of the stores. So then you're looking at the following prospect, which is those stores are closed because of forced divestiture. The workers lose their jobs for no fault of their own. And the local shoppers in the local community say, why did our Woolworths get closed? Oh, the government ordered it to be closed.
De coalitie en de Groenen hebben de bevindingen van het rapport van meneer Emerson verworpen. Oppositieleider Peter Dutton bestempelde de review als partijdig, terwijl de groene senator Mick McKim vindt dat het niet ver genoeg gaat.
The review was written, the results were dictated by Jim Chalmers, and I think this is a Mickey Mouse review that's been conducted by a Labor mate with an outcome predetermined by the Treasurer. There's not going to be any price relief here for consumers.
Dr. Emerson's recommendations are applying a band-aid to a gaping wound. And unless the concentration of market power of Coles and Woolworths is adequately addressed, nothing will change.
Dit verhaal van Sam Dover werd geproduceerd voor SBS Nieuws en in het Nederlands vertaald door SBS Dutch. Lieve heersbeestjes zijn bij velen geliefd en sommigen geloven dat hun velle kleuren en stippen geluk brengen. Het kleine kevertje wordt nu, dankzij onderzoek van Murdoch University, ook ingezet als ongediertebestrijder in de landbouw. PhD-onderzoeker Shovon Chandra Sakar is er namelijk in geslaagd lieve heersbeestjes te trainen om ongedierte op te eten. Namelijk de zeer invasieve bladvlooien die het gemunt hebben op tomaten en aardappelplanten.
We bring them in our lab and we had a big colony of them. So, yeah. From there, I collect the seaweed and train them, and then mimic this experiment in the glasshouse area.
Meneer Sakar ontdekte dat wanneer lieve heersbeestjes vroeg genoeg in hun levenscyclus kennis maakten met de bladvlooien, ze hen konden leren herkennen als hun favoriete prooi. De tomatenbladvlooi kan zorgen voor een oogstverlies van meer dan 50%. Ook kan het de ernstige bacteriële zebrachipziekte verspreiden in aardappelen en tomatenplanten.
When you cut the potato, you can see the black and white. And for the plant, this seaweed can suck the chlorophyll, you know, that used by plant to make their food. So once that they are decreasing chlorophyll content from the plant, and on the other way, they also affect the potato itself.
Bladvlooien voeden zich ook met paprika, chilipeper, gooiobessen, tamarillo, aubergine en zoete aardappelgewassen. Meneer Sakar werkte aan twee verschillende typen lieve heersbeestjes. Eén afkomstig uit Australië, de Coccinella transversalis, en een niet-inheemse, de Hippodamia virigata.
I worked on two ladybirds. One is native to Australia and another one introduced in 2002 in Queensland. And now it's all over in Australia. They both are commercially available, that's why I choose these two. So the grower can buy from the company. And other ladybirds we did not try. Maybe we can try in future.
Beide soorten lieve heersbeestjes kunnen door boeren online worden gekocht. En volgens onderzoeker Sakar kunnen ze gemakkelijk worden getraind om ongedierte te bestrijden. Dr. Mary Whitehouse is gedragsecoloog aan de Macquarie University en zegt dat dit zeer nuttig zou kunnen zijn.
A number of different websites. That a number of different suppliers of biological control agents, and they include, and the products they include are ladybirds. It's interesting that the work that's been shown here has them trained to focus on phacelids, and that is interesting. So that would possibly, if you were to use that commercially, then you'd want to work with one of these suppliers of biological control agents to actually say that the animals you're receiving had been trained on these pests.
Paul Jumaina, universitair hoofddocent aan de Universiteit van Melbourne, gespecialiseerd in duurzame landbouw, zegt dat er een aantal verschillende manieren zijn waarop boeren lieveheersbeestjes en andere nuttige insecten zouden kunnen gebruiken.
I guess the first is, as you've mentioned, introducing these beneficial insects into a cropping system. So, for example, there are a number of different commercial insectaries in Australia that actually breed up these beneficial insects and they sell them to farmers. And so they can be bought and they can be sent out to a particular farmer's property and then they can release those beneficial insects into their particular cropping system. So that's a really effective way to achieve biological control. But, of course, a lot of these beneficial insects already persist and are already present in a lot of our natural ecosystems already.
Professor Jumaina zegt dat het een kwestie is van het behoud van deze nuttige insecten die al in de Australische landbouwlandschappen voorkomen. Wetenschappers wenden zich steeds meer tot dit soort methoden als alternatief voor landbouwchemicaliën die vaak minder effectief zijn omdat ze in de loop van de tijd resistentie ontwikkelen.
Yeah, look, one of the, I guess, the challenges that we face here in Australia, but perhaps also more broadly in other countries as well, is I guess we do use insecticides and indeed other pesticides in our farming systems. And as I mentioned, they're very effective. They work very well. But unfortunately, sometimes the pests that we're actually trying to target evolve resistance to those chemicals. And so unfortunately, that there presents a real dilemma for growers and for farmers because the chemicals that they were using to achieve pest control may no longer work. And so, you know, sometimes there are other chemicals that they might be able to choose as an alternative, but often there may not be.
Dr. Whitehouse zegt dat het gebruik van nuttige insecten, zoals het lieveheersbeestje, in combinatie met een veelzijdige, geïntegreerde aanpak van ongediertebestrijding, kan worden gebruikt als alternatief voor chemicaliën.
I think it's great. I think what he's found suggests that you can target your beneficial on a particular prey. And I think there may be a use for that. So when you are augmenting a crop, you have a particular problem with the phacelids and you can buy in ladybirds that have been raised on phacelids or whose parents have been raised on, you know, the females have eaten phacelids so their offspring are more likely. That's what I think his research was suggesting. Then that could be very useful.
Dit was een verhaal van Hannah Kwon voor SBS Nieuws, in het Nederlands geproduceerd door SBS Dutch. Het aftellen is begonnen, nog 2,5 week tot de 45e editie van het Holland Festival. Gisteren belden we met festivaldirecteur Paul Rubens, die onder meer wat vertelt over de historie van het evenement dat 50 jaar geleden voor het eerst werd georganiseerd. Ook ligt hij een tipje van de sluier op over het programma. Het Holland Festival is dit jaar op een nieuwe overdekte locatie en belooft groter en beter dan ooit te worden.
Jouw gemeenschap, jouw gesprek, SBS Dutch.
Paul, the Holland Festival is approaching. It's the 45th edition, 50 years since the first one. How do you feel?
I feel really excited about this one. I think it's going to be just, I know everybody always says that the best one ever, but this one is pretty special, I think. Firstly, the facility is a 45,000 square meter gardens with lakes and everything and perfect parking. And inside that sits a 7,000 square meter building that we've filled. And I can't believe we filled it, but we did, with everything Dutch. We've got a carnival inside. We've got everything inside, and as Sydney people know, our Melbourne weather is not always perfect. And so at the end of April, we could get anything, but we don't care.
Yeah, it's also special. It's on the 27th of April, so Koningsdag, of course, a special day for Dutchies. You change location, as you just explained, undercover. I like your slogan. It's a bigger, better and weatherproof.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, look, The festival started, as you said before, 50 years ago. It was a tiny little effort for the Dutch community back then to do something, and it grew pretty nicely till about 2014, always run by the Association of Dutch Clubs, which were many Dutch clubs in Melbourne back then, and they had an association which enabled them to work together. And they raised some funds for aged care, actually, and that worked really well. But in 2014, they just ran out of puff. They got a bit too old and stopped. And, yeah, I resurrected it 3 years later as a Rotary fundraising thing. I had cooperation from the Association of Dutch Clubs. They gave me the whatever IP they had, which was really only a book with some writing in it, but it really helped. And yeah, since then we've run it 5 times. COVID sort of stopped us 2 or 3 times, but it's been a pleasure to do that. And look, the main 2 people running this are also not too young. I'm 77 and my main compatriot 78. But we're both pretty energetic and fit, and we're enjoying doing that. I think by the end of this festival, we'll have raised about $250,000, and every penny has gone to charity and to great charities, both Australia and internationally, as Rotary does do.
Mm. You can't organise a festival like this without generous sponsors like John Behrens and volunteers, of course. Are you still looking for volunteers to help out on the day?
Well, one of the things I've been able to do more and more over the last 6-7 years is involve other Rotary clubs. So each Rotary club in our area has maybe 30 members. And so I've got 4 of them involved this year, and other people from the public who just like to be volunteers, including some of the older ones from back in 2014. We generally have about 100 volunteers. We have an amazing young woman, actually, who is our HR manager, and she collects all the details and then rosters them all out into teams. And we have team leaders, and it just works really well. On the day, everybody has a good time. They all get a special T-shirt so that we're recognisable. We always love designing something a bit fancy, and that's popular. We give everybody, for every shift, they get a meal and a drink. So it's a lovely day for the volunteers, and I'd say we have enough already for this festival.
Mm. Mm. I've seen some great announcements. I will put a link on our website to your Facebook page so people can follow you if they want. But can you tell us a bit more about the new exhibitions that are coming up?
Well, look, that's my challenge every one of my challenges, to get enough Dutch things there, and also I want to get new things there, and of course there are only so many Dutch things. So this year we've got the Dutch Australian Heritage Centre, which is a Melbourne-based group who are having a display of 22 Dutch costumes from the different provinces. They're all on mannequins and that, and they'll have other things. Then there's the DACC, which is Australia-wide, actually, that works on maintaining Dutch Australian heritage. And they will have an exhibition by a lady called Nonya Peters, a professor from Western Australia, about Dutch immigration. So great Dutch immigration stories. And so there are banners of, I think, 14 different stories, including people like, say, Johnny Young, who most people will remember as a well-known and successful Australian singer. His real name was actually Johnny de Jong, and there's many other success stories. I think that's really worthwhile. We've got a group coming from Sydney, I think about 16 people, called Company Batavia, and they are all dressed up as soldiers from the Spanish War of 1560 to 1640 in Holland, between Holland and Spain. And so they are coming dressed up in armour with their armaments and their...
You've got security sorted as well.
Well, actually, I think they're even going to do a blunderbuss display where we open up a huge window to where they are, and they will shoot 17th century weapons out over the lake. Wow. They have to get police permission to do that, by the way. Mm. We've got that. So that's a really interesting group, I think. We've got 5 authors in an author's tent, Australian authors who have written stories about Dutch-Australian interaction, going back to Dirk Hartog in 1616, You know, there's even one called The Lost White Tribes of Australia, which is a story about shipwrecked Dutch sailors who intermarried into Aboriginal life and changed things over there in up in the Kimberleys. Fantastic stories. Mm. You know, another one of the ladies whose father actually wrote a book. He was involved with the war in Indonesia as a Dutchman, and the Dutch Indonesians actually had a government or near Brisbane during the war. Yeah, so that's another great story. So there's five authors there.
There's music, of course, by the choir, Zing.
Zing will be there. Yes, absolutely. We have a Dutch DJ and his partner, who's a saxophonist. They've come from Holland for two gigs, basically our gig and the night before another gig to do with King's Day. So they'll be there. We have an accordion band. We're seating for, I think, 300 people around the stage and seating for 400 around the premises. A very big carnival. And instead of charging $10 a ride, we charge $10 for the kids to get in and unlimited rides. They can do that. We also decided to have a family ticket. So if you've got five kids, you pay the same as if you had two kids.
Yeah, and like you said, the weather in Melbourne is not always great around this time of the year, but you've got that covered, literally.
Absolutely got it covered. That's right. There's nothing outside whatsoever. Parking for 3,000 cars. If it's raining, well, people can bring their umbrellas and we'll even have an umbrella storage area, I think.
I think this is already a lot of stuff that people like to see and, you know, they want to come on King's Day, celebrate it in Fern Tree Gully, isn't it?
That's right. Well, I wouldn't expect too many people to buy tickets for 3, 4, 5 weeks before a festival. But we've already got $10,000 worth of tickets sold, which is amazing,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah. Still tickets available. Good to know. It sounds very promising. I'll put a link on our website, sbs.com.au/Dutch, for everyone who would like to know more or buy tickets or follow you on Facebook. Before I let you go, I heard some rumors you will have a special guest coming over.
Oh, yes. The ambassador, she actually was in Melbourne a few weeks ago. I met with her. She's keen to come and enjoy the day, and she's going to come as our guest, and she's not going to make any speeches or anything like that. She just wants to enjoy a really lovely Dutch day, and that to me gives us is a real tick of approval from the Dutch community.
Thank you, Paul, for explaining what's going to happen in 2.5 weeks in Melbourne. Thank you so much.
Okay, dank je wel, and tot ziens.
Ja, het Holland Festival dus. Dit jaar op zaterdag 27 april. De deuren gaan open om 10:00 en het evenement duurt tot 18:00. Voor het festival heb je kaartjes nodig. Een link vindt u op onze website sbs.com.au/Dutch. Het is 11:35. We gaan de muziek draaien. Dit is Jan Smit live met Als de Nacht Verdwijnt. Gaat u voor het volgende verhaal maar even lekker zitten. Zegt de naam Margaretha of Margarita Wolters u iets? De Nederlandse leefde in de 18e eeuw en opereerde als spionagemeesteres. Sociaal en cultureel historica professor Kate Volkar stuitte tijdens de research voor haar boek Philip and Bennelong, A History Unraveled, op de naam van Wolters en was meteen gefascineerd door de vrouw die grote invloed lijkt te hebben gehad op de geschiedenis van Australië. Daarover zo straks meer. Vorige maand kreeg professor Volkar die de 2024 Hazel Rowley Literary Fellowship toegekend, waar een geldbedrag van zo'n $20,000 aan verbonden zit, voor haar nieuwe boek The Secret Life of Margaret Wolters. We wilden graag meer weten over deze geheimzinnige Margaretha en belden met Kate.
SBS Dutch, woensdag en zaterdag om 11:00 of online op elk gewenst tijdstip.
Congratulations on winning the 2024 Hazel Rowley Literary Fellowship.
Thank you very much, Pauline.
That's a big help for your next project, I reckon.
Yeah, it will be. Yes, it's a very generous fund, and I'll need it to be able to go to the Netherlands and also to London.
Yeah, well, that sounds very exciting, and we would like to know all about it. You're going to do research about this very intriguing lady, Dutch lady.
Yes, a Dutch lady called Margarete Wolters. And I only just came across her really accidentally in research for my last book, which was about Bennelong and Arthur Phillip, the first governor of New South Wales. And I think a lot of most Australians will know that the story of Phillip is that he's the first governor who comes with the first fleet in 1788. And then, historians do debate a little bit about what the colony in 1788 was supposed to be for. Was it just to get rid of convicts, or was it supposed to be a base for the British Empire? But they mostly concentrate on kind of British legal and political negotiations behind that decision. What I discovered, though, was that the British government, who had been thinking about a New South Wales colony for some time, they were actually triggered in the end to actually go ahead with it in 1786 because of some intelligence that they'd bought from a spy in Europe. Now, it's pretty normal for the British government to buy their intelligence. They don't have something like MI6 back in the 18th century. So they buy their intelligence from informants all over Europe. What I was stunned by was this particular piece of evidence that kind of triggers the whole New South Wales decision was bought from a spy mistress, not a spy master, which I think that I probably assumed at some point it was going to be a spy master. But it comes from Marguerite Wolters. And then I was very intrigued that she would have been the provider of the intelligence, that the British government kind of knew all about her, and then it clearly had been buying intelligence from her for a while. And then I just became intrigued about her life. You know, how could she have had the connection? What was her life like as a kind of illicit gatherer of information and a seller of information? And then this whole kind of world opened up for me. Then I realized that she wasn't just a spy herself, but was in charge of agents all over the continent, from Vienna to Madrid, and particularly around French ports.
Like a female James Bond from the Netherlands.
Exactly. Well, she was sort of more like, M. She was in charge of all these other little James Bonds everywhere else. And I just kind of thought that there might have been mistakes in how she'd been described, but she really was seen to be the boss. The piece of intelligence that she did then send to Britain in, I think it's 1782, was to say, look, the French Navy look like they're rearming, even though they had promised Britain about 15 years beforehand that they wouldn't rearm, and so that they would try and have maintain a kind of a peaceful relationship with Britain for the foreseeable future. But Marguerite's spies discovered that the French Navy was secretly rearming in quite a substantial way. The British government then sent Phillip himself as a spy as well to kind of back up that intelligence, and he confirmed it. And so they think, okay, the French are rearming. That means that they're going to try and grow their empire, even though they kind of promised that they wouldn't be growing at this point in time. They'd be a threat to the British Empire. We need to make our claim in the new world after the loss of Americas, and that's going to be in the South Pacific. And so sort of moving backwards, you can sort of see that there's a train of events that lead from New South Wales establishment to Marguerite Wolters.
Yeah.
So I was totally intrigued by her. Yeah.
And you thought, I want to know more about her and would like to write a book about her.
I would.
Yeah.
I would. So currently, we don't quite know what the book's going to look like, because what I have discovered in the meantime, I've not been over to Europe since this discovery yet. What I discovered that there are stacks and stacks of her intelligence reports that she sold to the British government in the British archives. So I know that they exist. I got someone to take some digitized, photos of them and send them over to me. They're all handwritten in French, and they look like to be at least 50 files written by her in various departments of the British archives. So that's something. What I don't know is what I will be able to find about her personal life. So that's all still a bit of a mystery for me.
Yeah, we know that she was born in the 1730s.
Yeah, I kind of backtrack, and I guess that she probably is born around the 1730s. We know that she's also marries the man called Dirk Wolters in about the 1750s. And he is the one who owns this business, really, which is a spy business with agents all around Europe. And he already has this relationship with the British government. And so they kind of work together for about 20 years of their marriage. But Dirk dies in 1771. And I think the British government assumed that the whole agency would then go to his kind of deputy or some other spy, male spy would step up. But it turned out that Marguerite just took over the business from her husband once he died. And then she continues it really as the leader of this whole kind of group of spies for at least left, well, nearly for another 20 years into the French Revolution, she's still sending missives to the French government about what, to the British government, sorry, about what the French are doing.
Wow, impressive. This sounds like a movie.
Yeah, I'm hoping so. I'm hoping so, but I will need to have a little bit more personal information about her, which I'm a little bit worried may not exist. Partly I'm worried because it looks like she, or she definitely was, born and married and died and gave birth to a daughter in Rotterdam. And so the status of Rotterdam archives, as I'm sure your Dutch listeners know, is a little bit unstable. I'm hoping that whatever kind of basic at least life data may be in The Hague, in the National Archive. But going to Rotterdam after what happened to a lot of documents and archives there may be a bit risky. But I'm really looking forward to revisiting Rotterdam. I went there in the 90s, haven't not been back for more than 20 years. So it'll be great to see Rotterdam, even though it's a very, very different Rotterdam, obviously, than Marguerite would have known, and just try and imagine her life there.
Yeah. Have you planned your trip already?
Not exactly which month, but it'll be definitely next year sometime. I can't go yet this year, but I'm really looking forward to next year going.
Yeah. Maybe someone is listening and thinks, hey, Margarita Wolters, I have heard about her, or someone in my family, she's from Rotterdam. I don't know. Maybe someone can help. That will be awesome.
Please get in touch with me, katefulliger@acu. I'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, we'll put your email address on our website, sbs.com.au/Dutch, and we hope for the best. And please keep in touch and let us know as soon as you know more about this very special lady.
Yeah, I would love to come back and tell you more about Marguerite, yes.
Thank you so much, Kate.
Thank you.
Na al dit gepraat over spionnen zit ik toch een beetje met James Bond in mijn hoofd. Vandaar dat ik nu een themesong van een van de James Bond films ga draaien. Het nummer GoldenEye hoorde bij de gelijknamige film uit 1995 met Pierce Brosnan als 007. De uitvoerende artiest is niet Nederlands. Weet u wie het liedje wel zong? Dat was Tina Turner, niemand minder dan de grote diva. Maar er is wel degelijk een Nederlandse link met de film. De actrice Famke Janssen uit Nederland vertolkte in deze Bondfilm namelijk de rol van Xenia Onatopp en brak hiermee wereldwijd door. Dus vandaar nu Tina Turner met GoldenEye. Australië is het droogste van alle bewoonde continenten met aanzienlijke verschillen in regenval, temperatuur en weerpatronen in de diverse klimaatzones en van jaar tot jaar. Van het tropische noorden tot het gematigde zuiden heeft Australië ook te maken met veel extreme weersomstandigheden, zoals tropische cyclonen, overstromingen, hittegolven en droogte. Het Australische klimaat heeft een grote invloed op de diverse ecosystemen, waarvan er vele kwetsbaar zijn als gevolg van waterschaarste. Klimaatverandering, bosbranden en droogte vormen een verdere bedreiging voor deze omgevingen, wat aantoont dat er alles aan gedaan moet worden om deze ecosystemen te behouden.
SBS Dutch, woensdag en zaterdag om 11 uur 's ochtends of online op elk gewenst tijdstip.
Australië is een groot land en afhankelijk van de geografische locatie waar u woont, is er aanzienlijke variatie in landschap, klimatologische omstandigheden en weer. Aan het begin van de 20e eeuw schreef de Australische dichter Dorothea McKellar haar beroemde eerbetoon My Country, waarin de schoonheid en verlatenheid van dit uitgestrekte bruine land werd vastgelegd. I love a sunburnt country, a land of sweeping plains, of ragged mountain ranges, of drought and flooding rains. Een beschrijving van Australië die tot op de dag van vandaag klopt. Catherine Genter is senior klimatoloog bij het Bureau of Meteorology en zij legt enkele van de extreme gebeurtenissen uit die in Australië voorkomen.
Australia is known as the land of drought and flooding rains. It can have years of drought, which bring hot weather and increased fire risk. But it can then have months of heavy rainfall that lead to widespread flooding. Across northern Australia, tropical cyclones are also a risk in the wet season. Other extreme weather Australians can face include severe thunderstorms, which can experience large hail.
Er zijn verschillende factoren die kunnen bijdragen aan de weersextremen waarmee Australië te maken kan krijgen.
Climate drivers such as the El Niño Southern Oscillation and the Indian Ocean Dipole can increase our chance of experiencing some of these extremes. And climate change is also shifting our chances of extreme weather.
Australië is het zesde grootste land ter wereld. Hoewel Australië een landoppervlak heeft van iets meer dan 7,5 miljoen vierkante kilometer, beslaat Australië slechts 5% van de totale landoppervlak in de wereld.
Australia is a large mass of land which extends from the warm tropical regions near the equator to the cooler mid-latitudes. Sunshine, weather patterns, rainfall and topography are all very different across the country. And with this variation, there are many different climate zones across our country.
Deze klimaatzones kunnen worden geclassificeerd op basis van variatie in temperatuur en vochtigheid, vegetatie en seizoensgebonden regenval. En de seizoenen in Australië variëren ook in de verschillende delen van het land.
Australia is located in the Southern Hemisphere. This means for those in the Northern Hemisphere, from North America, Europe and Asia, our seasons are the opposite. Southern Australia has summer, autumn, winter and spring, with our summertime occurring in December to February. However, tropical northern Australia only has two seasons, the wet season during October to April and the dry season during May to September.
Het is Aboriginals en Torres Strait Islander volkeren in Australië gelukt om het ingewikkelde klimaat van Australië te leren begrijpen. Ze herkennen verschillende seizoenskalenders op basis van hun geografische locatie in Australië, die lokale veranderingen in het weer en de natuur laten zien. Lokale variaties in weer, temperatuur en belangrijker nog regenval beïnvloeden de lokale klimatologische omstandigheden die mevrouw Genter ervaart.
Near to the equator, we have tropical northern Australia, which experiences lots of sunshine and heavy seasonal rainfall. Across southern Australia, we have cooler continental weather with a Mediterranean climate across the southwest that has hot, dry summers. The east coast has a temperate climate with no dry season and warm to hot summers. But overall, Australia is a very dry country, with much of inland Australia seeing little rainfall.
De beschikbaarheid van water en de voorkomende droogte hebben gevolgen voor de landbouw, gemeenschappen en de gezondheid van het Australische milieu.
Water is precious in Australia, with over half of the country typically having less than 350 millimeters of rainfall a year. Drought is not simply low rainfall. If it was, much of inland Australia would be in almost perpetual drought. Meteorologists look at rainfall deficiencies. Agriculturalists rate the impact on primary industries. Hydrologists examine surface and groundwater levels. And sociologists define it by the impact on the community.
Australië is ook het droogste bewoonde continent ter wereld. En de meeste plekken zijn waterarm. En onze biodiversiteit is nauwkeurig afgestemd om deze waterbalans te beheren. Dr. Blair Parsons is directeur Impact bij Greening Australia, een organisatie die ernaar streeft gezonde en productieve landschappen te creëren waarin mensen en de natuur gedijen.
While some parts of the country can experience flooding rains, water availability is a concern for many of our communities. In southwestern Australia, a global drying hotspot, rainfall has declined by more than 20% since 1970, leading to a streamflow reduction of over 80%.
Met een diversiteit aan eeuwenoude landschappen die zich in de loop van de miljarden jaren hebben ontwikkeld, ervaart het Australische milieu momenteel een reeks bedreigingen, zo legt Dr. Parsons uit.
Now, our unique and fragile ecosystems are under threat from climate change, natural disasters, land clearing and other intensive human activities. Nowhere is this more apparent than at one of our most iconic natural wonders, the Great Barrier Reef, which is at risk of disappearing by 2100 if we fail to take urgent action on climate change.
Het Great Barrier Reef is een van de natuurlijke wereldwonderen en is het grootste koraalrif ter wereld. Slechte waterkwaliteit is een belangrijke bedreiging voor het Great Barrier Reef. Elk jaar stromen miljoenen tonnen sediment van het eroderende land naar het rif, waardoor vissen, zeegras en koraal verstikken en het vermogen van het rif om te herstellen van de gevolgen van de klimaatverandering afneemt.
Greening Australia is working with local landholders and First Nations communities to rebuild eroding gullies and restore coastal wetlands, which act like the reef's kidneys by filtering water before it flows into the ocean. Since our reef aid program started in 2016, We've prevented over 44,000 tonnes of water pollutants from reaching the reef, and we've shown that by restoring gullies, we can reduce sediment runoff from gullies by 90%, almost immediately.
Dr. Parsons zegt dat Australië het thuis is voor zo'n 10% van de biodiversiteit van de wereld en dat een groot deel daarvan uniek is en dus nergens anders voorkomt. Toch heeft Australië een van de hoogste uitstervingscijfers ter wereld.
The latest State of Environment report rated the environment as in poor or deteriorating health and described at least 19 of our ecosystems as showing signs of collapse. If we don't take action now, we risk losing our precious natural species and ecosystems forever, leading to very real social and economic consequences, representing an existential threat to survival.
De aanpak van de gevolgen van klimaatverandering en milieubehoud vraagt om inspanning en veranderingen op lokaal, nationaal en wereldniveau. Ook individuen kunnen een verschil maken, bijvoorbeeld op het gebied van waterbehoud. Volgens Dr. Parsons kunnen we ons gedrag en landschappen aanpassen op een droger wordend klimaat, te midden van de toenemende kans op steeds ernstig wordende periodes van droogtes die vaker zullen voorkomen.
In urban areas, those with gardens can keep native drought-tolerant plants to reduce watering needs and provide habitat for native animals at the same time. Watering gardens early in the morning or late afternoon also reduces water use by reducing evaporation. In rural areas, people can rehydrate the landscape by restoring natural water flows using earthworks and planting of native free vegetation. This can help create drought-resilient farming systems and improve soil health, agricultural productivity and flood control when it does rain.
Extreme weersomstandigheden in Australië kunnen gevaarlijk zijn voor mensen en infrastructuur. Dus is het belangrijk om voorbereid te zijn, zegt mevrouw Kanter van het Bureau of Meteorology.
Severe weather can develop quickly and threaten lives and property. You can reduce the impact of severe weather by taking time to prepare. Bureau has a Know Your Weather, Know Your Risk page that allows you to learn more about the types of severe weather we can get and how to best prepare ahead of time. It also has important links through to the state agencies too. So please visit www.bom.gov.au/knowyourweather to learn more.
Ook via de website van het Bureau of Meteorology en de BOM Weather app, deze is gratis te downloaden, kunt u op de hoogte blijven van de laatste weervoorspellingen en waarschuwingen. En volg altijd het advies op van de lokale hulpdiensten. Deze Australia Explained werd samengesteld door Phil Tusek. Hiermee komen we aan het einde van deze uitzending van SBS Dutch. Op onze website www.sbs.com.au/dutch kunt u deze aflevering terugluisteren, net als onze andere gesprekken en podcastseries. Denk bijvoorbeeld aan Aanboord, maar ook Aan tafel en Het verliezen van je Nederlanderschap, maar ook Australië tot nu toe en de 12 provinciën. Terugluisteren kan ook via de SBS Audio app. Deze is gratis te downloaden in de Apple Store en Google Play of via uw eigen favoriete podcastplayer. We zijn ook te vinden op Facebook, facebook.com/sbsdutch. We eindigen vandaag met muziek van Connie van der Bos, Een roosje, mijn roosje. Zing lekker mee. Ik wens een hele fijne middag. Tot zaterdag.
Wil je nog meer soortgelijke verhalen? Luister via Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify of waar je je podcasts dan ook vandaan haalt.
SBS is Australia's most trusted multilingual broadcaster. Our listeners are loyal, highly engaged and have supported countless local businesses. We offer advertising packages for businesses of all sizes. Our experienced sales team will guide you through the process of owning a great campaign. Bring your own ad or have our production team make you something in one of our 68 languages. Start the conversation with your new audience today. Email sales@sbs.com.au.